Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael, and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today, we're going to be discussing three stories. First of all, the big story, which is Nigeria's Independence Day anniversary, 1st of October. And I gather that Nigeria is 63 today. You know, everything in Nigeria is always uncertainty. So we are apparently 63, but we might never know. Secondly, we're discussing Atiku's suit against Bola Tinubu and the Chicago State University filed before the U.S. courts, the U.S. federal courts in Chicago or in Illinois. Big news today. The court has ruled in Atiku's favor, ordering the university to release Bola Tinubu's academic qualifications and applications. Thirdly, we'll discuss the news that a minister in Nigeria, the Minister for Tourism, Lola Adejohn, has been poisoned. So discussing these things with me, as I've said, is Phoenix. So Phoenix, onto the first topic. Independence Day, we'll discuss it in two parts. First of all, we'll discuss our views on whether or not there's anything to celebrate about Nigeria being 63. And secondly, we'll discuss Bola Tinubu's speech to the nation on our 63rd birthday. So what to you, Phoenix? Are you excited that Nigeria is 63? What are the positives that make you smile when you think about the journey we've been on since we got our independence from the British?
Hi, Michael, and hello, listeners. Thanks for joining us as always. And thanks for your continued feedback. I know a number of people have been asking us why we don't have guests of late. I'm actually calling out our chairman, and he sets the schedule. So if you guys want to know what's going on, hold Michael responsible. But yes, indeed, we do expect to have people join us. And we're actually calling out to APC folks, because a lot of people have been, of course, everyone knows I'm the resident obedient, and Michael is as neutral, while obviously he won't touch APC with a 10-foot pole. So yeah, we're calling on our APC listeners to come and join us. Raise your hand if you want to come join the discussion. But back to Michael's question. We're 63, and I'm not excited. I haven't been excited for quite a while. I know people always accuse me of being the pessimist, but actually I was looking forward to this 63rd anniversary with some hope, as I hoped that Nigeria would turn the corner and elect a president worthy of the name. But alas, INEC conspired to rob us of our dream. And we see that the PEPT has also done their own act. So all those leave me very much disappointed and not excited at all. But yes, to Michael's point, there are positives. I continue to be thankful that in as much as we've had turbulent times, we've had struggles, we have insecurity, and I thank the armed forces, the security forces, who continue to do their best to keep bad actors at bay as much as they can. I mourn for those we've lost and continue to lose due to insecurity, and every time I call on the government to do their job. But I'm still thankful that, I mean, we don't have a wide-scale conflagration. There are so many countries around us, especially if we look in the Sahel, if we look in East Africa, if we look at all those kinds of places where the whole country is in turmoil, and there are much, much worse situations than we are in. And we've gone through so much that we could have tipped into that. And so I remain thankful and hopeful that we find the right leadership that helps us to move towards progress and things like that. But yeah, that's the only thing I find, positive amid all the gloom.
Thank you, Phoenix. But some would say the fact that we've had democracy since 1999 should be something to be positive about. The fact that Nigerians are not killing themselves, perhaps as they used to during the Civil War and the pogroms, are things to be thankful for. Do you not share those things? Do you not share those views?
I am happy that we seem to have moved away from military rule. I'm not happy about the type of democracy that we have that is not truly enabling the will of the people, or at least not letting the people believe that their votes count. And it seems like every cycle it gets worse, so I'm worried about that. Indeed, I am happy that we have not gone back to the situation we had during the Civil War, but we also have not pushed inclusivity. We've not built a nation where everyone feels a part of it. So it's almost as if we've papered over the cracks. So, I mean, again, I go back to my point. The only good thing, as far as I'm concerned, is that we haven't descended into utter chaos. Something seems to be holding it together. We seem to find moments that we pull back from the brink, but we continually see people who continue to test this very tense situation that we have. And part of it is what I was alluding to, you know, our democracy, our elections, you know, the economic situation, the refusal to embrace diversity, all those things test the rather tenuous peace that we have. So while I hear you that, yes, we have democracy, but is this truly the type of democracy that we hope for? I don't think so. So yeah, that's where I'm at on that.
Thank you, Phoenix. And then to the second part of my question, which is Bola Tinubu's speech. He gave, I think it was about half an hour or even probably slightly more speech, encouraging Nigerians and making a few policy announcements. So what did you think? What were your key takeaways from his speech?
I came away more positive than I've been in recent times around the government. I think, especially when I thought about the policy announcements, especially those that center around the economy and things like that, and dealing with the key issues that we have at hand. We've seen inflation hit the mid-20s, you know, trending higher. We've seen, you know, the issues with fuel subsidy. We've seen the inability to deal with the FX crisis. And so when he spoke to those things, and one of the things I've held him accountable for was that he made big policy announcements from day one. Subsidy is gone. We're going to harmonize FX rates. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. But there was no work behind it. There was no action, effective action that was put in place to implement and enable those things. And there was quite clearly for me a lack of understanding of what the issues are. There are still some gaps. But at least in addressing the issues around, you know, purchasing power of the people that has been severely hampered, I long overdue and something that should have been done. That was required. And also addressing it in a very smart manner, which is what I thought, because, you know, talking about his 25K, you know, intervention, blah, 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 which obviously goes to the public sector, over 6 months, that helps to transition. So basically what you're saying is, look, you pay these people this extra money, and then it gives you time to really work out the modalities of upping the wage scale so that, you know, the higher prices that we now have, people are better able to manage without disrupting the pricing structure, without disrupting, you know, and creating even more inflation. I thought that was good. I thought that was a positive. the 15 million, thing, expanding the social safety net, it's needed. The question is always transparency. The question is always making sure that this is not something that some people just corner and make bank, and that people who are desperately in need actually get help. If that happens, that would also be a positive short-term measure that addresses the challenges that people have had. But there needs to be, more actions. He talked about transportation. He talked about, staying the course on subsidy, which is not in consonance with previous policy statements he had made. Because while he had said subsidy was gone, then he came a month or so ago. He then announced that fuel prices will not go up, when clearly oil prices in the international markets were going up, and therefore fuel was going to be more expensive in Nigeria as well. We're not isolated. So if he's now saying that, he's still sticking to his guns on subsidy, so maybe he's undoing that, which is part of the concerns I've had with this guy, that there's no thinking through, and therefore their policy flip-flops. One minute you say this, then you say that, then you say this again. But I'm hoping that now that he has his team in place, now that, we have a CBN governor, he has his finance minister, he has all those guys in place, that maybe they are now having a coherent agenda that enables them to move forward. So all in all, I think there were some good things that came out of that speech. I think there are still bigger things that need to be addressed, because fundamentally, if we're talking about inflation, a key part of it is food inflation. You've still not solved for it. And one of the solves for it is you need to undo some of the policies that Buhari did that drove up food prices. Tackling insecurity is big. Fixing transport infrastructure is big. Those things may probably not happen overnight. But all of the import bans and things that you were doing with an announcement, you can undo those things and begin to let, food come in to crash prices and things like that. So I say all of that to say it was a good step in the right direction. Like, I called out all the things I thought were positives, but there's still more that needs to be done.
Thank you, Phoenix. And I just want to pin down this issue of the subsidy. Has it actually been removed? Because
I was wondering if you were surprised about me saying positive things about
yes.
Tinubu. I'm sure the likes of Bambino they'll be surprised.
Yes, well, no, yes, no, there.
But tell me.
But has it actually been removed? Because some commentators are saying, if it had been, the price should have gone up beyond the 500 naira per liter that it is. And secondly, has the currency actually been floated? Because some people are saying it hasn't.
I mean, you're right on both scores. I mean, subsidy. Let's put it this way. At the onset, he announced subsidy removal, and then we saw the prices go up. At that point in time, there was no subsidy. But this is not a one and done thing. You don't just move prices to a new price benchmark and then say subsidy is gone, because the prices, change every day. So you need to truly let the market set the price. Or you need to react to the market and make sure that, there's nowhere that the price that we are paying at the pump is lower than what we should pay. So to that extent, we got to a point, and we saw the report that in August subsidy was paid. It's fact. It's economics. You can't hide it. The numbers will always show up. So we got to a point where, the price was lower than what the price was supposed to be, and we're paying subsidy again. And then he made the comment, like I said earlier, that they were not going to allow further increases in prices. So yes, subsidy did come back. The issue now is, if he's saying, like he said on the call, that those who were hoping that they will continue to do subsidy, blah, 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 and that he still maintains that point, then we should see it immediately that prices should go up, because oil prices are up now. So that's what remains to be seen. And those are the kind of things I'm talking about, that he made the right comments. Now let's see if they will execute. Let's see if prices will actually go up. Because after all, he's now giving people money. He should not be afraid to let prices, land where they should land. The same thing with FX. And let's not forget that both are interwoven. Because you import most of the fuel that we consume, there's an FX impact. With the Naira getting devalued, and as of last count, we're now at 1,000 Naira to the dollar on the parallel market, which, to all intents and purposes, that's the only market. Any other market that CBN is claiming, they're just joking, because nobody can get dollars at lower than 1,000 Naira at this point in time. Let the currency land where it should land. So that, you know, it's always about, you know, price discovery can happen. Where willing sellers and willing buyers meet, that's where you find price, not where you set it and you think that you can, and then you're not able to supply the FX. So I'm answering your question to say, no, subsidy has not been removed. We wait to see if this new speech that he has given drives us in the right direction. And also, Naira has not been floated. Very clear. So these are things that need to be fixed.
Now, secondly, he's also said, as you've pointed out, that 25,000 Naira will be paid to civil servants for 6 months. But the question is, what happens after that? Because if this fuel increase is permanent and you're paying them 25,000 Naira just for 6 months, what are they supposed to do after that period? Do you have an idea, Felix?
My expectation, and this is what I made a comment on earlier today, my expectation is that it's a transition to a new minimum wage and a new wage structure. I expect that they would at some point roll this in, and maybe minimum wage becomes 50K, and then you have a new wage structure. But it's a way to, without making noise that, oh, we have changed the minimum wage, because you know how political that gets, to start it as an intervention, and it gives you 6 months to fix. That would be my expectation. That would make sense. That would be smart. Because yes, you do have to review the minimum wage. We know that inflation has eroded the purchasing power of folks. We know that the 30K has been in place for too long. So this gives them an opportunity to fix that within the next 6 months.
Well, we shall wait to see if it's actually achievable in the six-month period. The other thing he said was he was going to take insecurity seriously and empower the security forces to defeat all the terrorists who are causing chaos in the country. But have you seen any evidence of this sort of renewed effort to tackle insecurity?
You know, we talked about this, and I did challenge him a couple of months ago when I said, you know, just changing the service chiefs and the Inspector General of Police was not enough for you to turn the tide on insecurity. And then I said things that needed to change, that the whole security architecture, the way we operate, especially from an intelligence perspective, needed to change. And it was interesting for me to hear him speak to those things. If you listened, that was what he was talking about. He was talking about doctrine. He was talking about intelligence. He was talking about, you know, more sharing among the forces. If that is what they've been working on, then I expect to see the impact, you know, within the near future, because that's what really will move the needle. It's not just you switching people around or throwing money after arms, and it's about training. It's about, you know, deploying the right situations. It's about making sure that we're working first with the brains before the brawn. And so another positive for me was hearing him talk about things like that. Again, some people have said to me when we're discussing this privately that, yes, anybody can make a good speech, but the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So for me, I wait to see. But if he is listening, and if those are the things they're acting on, then we should see the outcomes in good time.
Well, thank you. We shall see. Because as you know, Boko Haram are not sleeping and the other terrorist groups are still on the rampage. So we shall see. But on to the next topic, which is Atiku's case filed before the US federal court in the sort of Illinois district. The question before the court was whether or not they should release Bola Tinubu's academic records from Chicago State University. And the courts have ruled in his have ruled in Atiku's favor and dismissed Bola Tinubu's objections. My first question is, did you expect the courts to rule this way, or was this a surprise to you?
There was no surprise. There was no surprise. On the points of the law, it was clear that the court could only rule one way. It would have been shocking if they ruled any other way. I mean, the basis of the case was always the fact that he's a public figure and the records being asked for, he cannot make his sole defense was privacy. And it is settled case law and also in specific laws in the US that public figures, they, especially if it's documents that you've entered into public domain, the privacy thing no longer counts. So I would have been surprised if a court in the US had tried to protect him from a privacy perspective. You're a politician and the president of a country. Some things are no longer, you can't claim privacy in certain things anymore. So for me, I was not surprised that this is what happened. The only concern that I had, and I think I mentioned it, was about timing, was whether this would come out in time to meet the deadline of the Supreme Court, which I believe is 5th of October or something like that. So that was the only concern. But to the extent that, I mean, my expectation was that this would only go one way.
And then what did you think about the quality of the writing? Because a number of people said
Don't get me started, Michael.
the judges, yeah, people said the judge's ruling seemed very simple and easy to follow as when you compare with the rulings in the presidential election petition tribunals. It was that your experience?
Absolutely. It was, I mean, I think I made a tweet today where I was saying that one of the things that I enjoyed the most from this whole Atiku episode is, and maybe that was at the back of his mind when he was also pursuing the case, or maybe it's part of the strategy of his lawyers, is that by going after that and people seeing all of the proceedings and seeing how the US, because we always, you know, talk about Sena claims and blah blah blah, but Nigerians were able to follow the proceedings, you know, first in the first court that this matter went to, and the judge ruled in favor of Atiku. Then it went to the district court with this new judge, Maldonado. So Nigerians were able to follow. They heard the pleadings. They followed the proceedings. They read the judgment. So it provides a fantastic contrast to what the PEPT did, number one. So it also, in my view, also provides a lens through which you would then look at the Supreme Court. I can imagine myself being a Supreme Court justice in Nigeria who is going to sit on this matter now. And surely they're not blind, they're not deaf. They will have heard about all this and they would some way or the other see the proceedings. And they would then know that, look, if we've, I mean, we can go there and go and do nonsense, but people will verily have something to be able to look at and say, no, what you clearly did was nonsense. I mean, you needed to see. And one of the issues that I've had with election tribunal, and particularly with PEPT, and I've charged the Supreme Court, is you cannot simply look at an election case, especially a petition, you know, regarding election to the office of the president of Nigeria. You cannot simply look at it as, you know, one person, candidate A against candidate B. You have to take into account the overwhelming national interest. And Justice, whether she's called Justice or Judge, Maldonado called it out, that the prevailing national interest supersedes, and she said it, that it supersedes the interest or whatever claim you want to make as an individual. That's what I've said. You need to make sure that you're looking at the facts of the case, but are you also bearing in mind that this is not, it's not like a land dispute between two people. This is a matter of national importance. And so you need to make sure that whatever you're looking at, you're not simply just looking for technicalities to remove witnesses that are pertinent to the case. And so once the witness is removed, then you can go and throw something out, or you tell the person that no, you shouldn't depend on INEC when INEC is the electoral authority, all sorts of inanities that these guys were coming up with. So when you then see a judge who looks at the judgment, who looks at the facts of the case, who looks at the spirit of the matter and says, based on law, this is settled law. You're a public officer. The threshold for privacy is higher. And so any matter that is, you know, in the interest of in the overwhelming national interest, we will lean in towards that. That's justice. That's justice. And then you see it laid out, you know, step by step, logic by logic, and that's what we're asking for. Nobody is saying that you must declare that yes, Obi won or Obi. Follow the facts of the case. When somebody brings an election petition tribunal to you, you are putting INEC on the stand. INEC is the one that you need to then go to as the judge. You say, in the overwhelming national interest, INEC, provide us the results that you said led to what you declared. It's very simple. Provide every single result. We look through the results. We confirm that, yes, there's no issue. And then we follow what you said. If there is issue, we deal with it in line with the law. Not that we say, no, you should not rely on INEC. Go and bring your own results. So if I then manufacture the results and bring it to the court, will you then call INEC to come and verify what I've done? So why are you wasting everybody's time? So, you know, it's about, you know, the intent to dispense justice, not to deepen injustice and turn matters on his head. And so I like the fact that Nigerians have seen a contrast, and it now remains to be seen how this puts the Supreme Court in a different position.
Thank you, Phoenix. So I suppose that's the first part. The second part was the court did say that obviously it is still up to the Nigerian Supreme Court to decide whether or not any new evidence found is meets the test of an exceptional circumstance to allow them admit whatever findings Atiku or whatever Atiku discovers. The question is, do you expect the Nigerian Supreme Court to act on this evidence? So if, for example, the Chicago State University confirms that Bola Tinubu did submit fraudulent qualifications, do you expect the Supreme Court to admit this new evidence?
Ooh, it's a tough one, Michael. It's a tough one. You know, the funny thing, I just saw on our handle, because it was a question that was asked last week of people to say, what do they expect to happen? If the Chicago State University is compelled to release the results, we see a number of people saying that they expect there to be a big revelation, but we see 60% plus people saying they expect there to be a big revelation but no impact. I interpret that to be that people expect that yes, there will be news that will be very, very controversial and be worthy of being included, but that they don't believe that the Supreme Court will allow it. And that worries me because, of course, it shows that people have lost hope in our judiciary. People are jaded and things like that. I'm caught in two minds. Number one, I want to see how weighty the revelation is. I believe strongly that if it's significant enough, I think they will have no choice but to accept it. I think they will have, I mean, I think if it's significant enough, because remember, when we look at Tinubu's form that he submitted, he did not submit any other academic qualification except Chicago State University. So if that is called into question, then the whole basis of his qualification is called into question. It's different if he had put primary school, secondary school, and university, because then they could play the same stupid game that the guys in Enugu played, where they said, well, he doesn't need an NYSC qualification, as ridiculous as that sounds. because he missed the threshold, submitting something else. Since this guy did not submit anything else, and the only thing that he submitted to show that he qualifies is now deemed to be fake, if that is what comes out, then they have no choice but to accept it. In the spirit, again, me holding them to that standard of what is the overwhelming national interest? Is it in our national interest to have somebody of such improper character be the president of the country? Is it in our national interest to have somebody who has such skeletons in his cupboard and therefore can be manipulated and subject to, a black man? You never know, because what else is he hiding? Is it, so in the overwhelming national interest, for me, they must accept it. While I was talking today, on Twitter, somebody then challenged me. Again, speaking to the fact that I believe that people are jaded and don't believe in the country. I think one of our listeners then said to me that it's something to the extent of, like, this is the Nigerian judiciary that we're talking about. They really don't care, blah blah. I was like, no, at that level they care. At the Supreme Court justice level, there's a legacy part of it. Yes, we know that we've had people who have skeletons in their cupboard, people who, the mayordomos of this world and blah, 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 blah. But at the least, there should be some dissent to say, no, 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 we are not going to allow the Supreme Court to be solid this way. On this type of matter, they need to accept the evidence and then let it be discussed. So that's where I stand to say this, I mean, I will be, if the evidence is that overwhelming, I would be blown away if they decide that no, we're not going to accept it because it didn't come through PEPT or blah, blah, blah.
But there's a broader point, because some of the commentary on social media made reference to the fact that the courts might just decide to hide behind technicalities and, for example, argue that, well, Atiku did not plead this forgery at the outset, and therefore it's too late to plead it now. But then there's counter argument saying that this is quite a serious issue. This should not be about whether or not Atiku provided this evidence at the outset. If it is the case that the president of the country presented forged documents as part of his application, then even the courts themselves should be so outraged by that they should set aside any technicalities and disqualify him. That's what the second school of thought says. What do you say, Felix?
Absolutely. That's the point I'm making. I fully agree with that school of thought, that this is too much of an issue that impacts the country, that you cannot default to technicality and say, oh, you didn't plead it. Yeah, they did mention it in their they didn't plead it, I think, as one of the issues they were pursuing, but I think they did mention it in doing the proceedings. So they made sure that there was an opportunity for them to bring in the issue, knowing fully well that they were in court at the time. So it was referenced. So if they then bring it up, it is that significant to the point you are making. It is such an egregious matter that you cannot wave it off and say, no, due to technicality, we're not going to allow you to bring it. Now, I'm going out on a limb here, and I might be wrong. Please, whoever is coming to drag me, because I can't remember in full details. But I'm thinking that, remember, we're also talking about two people challenging Tinubu's candidacy. I think that Peter Obi would have had it, or if I remember correctly, had it in his case, or maybe I'm wrong, because I'm thinking that if I'm Atiku and somebody is saying that I didn't present it in my case, and the other guy, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is to make sure that Tinubu is disqualified, right? And then we find out who what the next step that the Supreme Court wants to do, whether they order us to go to another election or blah, 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 or they declare one of us winners. Why not? If the other person has presented it and I didn't present it, and that's going to be the technicality, then give the information to the other person to go and present it. The most important thing is that it shows up in front of the court. So going back to your original point, if, I mean, if it is confirmed that there was an issue with his certification and with his going to that school, I believe it is significant enough that they must, in the overwhelming national interest, accept it. But then again, if there's another opportunity to bring it in, it should be explored. It should.
Thank you. And then a former Minister for Aviation, who's a prominent member of the PDP, Osita Chidoka, wrote an interesting thread on Twitter. And he made the point that this ruling in the US should embarrass the Nigerian authorities because, first of all, for years, Bola Tinubu has been a public figure submitting all kinds of documents. And how come, he says, how come nobody in the security services, nobody in his party, nobody at INEC even picked up on the fact that any of these documents or any of his alleged qualifications could be suspect? And he asked, well, what's the point of having all these agencies if nobody does the most basic of background checks? And he broadened the point to highlight the fact that even the Minister for Youth, I believe, is also alleged to not have completed her. I don't know if it's youth or Minister for Culture, is alleged to not have to still be doing her NYSC whilst being a minister. And Chidoka was implying that under this APC administration, impunity seems to be the watchword. What are your views? Do you agree with the former minister, Chidoka?
Well, I think his final point about impunity, I mean, if I say I agree with it, is an understatement because I've been screaming this for the last 8 years. I mean, we've seen so many things happen, even, and I think he also mentioned it in his thread, even when the security services, DSS in particular, raised an issue about Magu's passed or whatever as part of the confirmation and provided that to the Senate as reason why it should not be confirmed. Buhari kept him in office as acting chairman and nothing happened. So impunity and APC have gone hand in hand for as long as they've been in power. To the point that he was making about why didn't security services pick up on Tinubu's certificates? I mean, they picked up on it. Who are they going to raise the issue to? We've seen security services largely suborned and serving the powers that be. If at that point in time, if it wasn't in Buhari's interest for Tinubu to be exposed, nobody was going to expose him. And is it now that he has been sworn in as president that security forces, that's not how things work. We would want things to work differently in the sense that we would want people in the security forces to not be too that enamored of the executive that they will not do their job to Nigeria who they swore the oath to, but we know that that's not what happens. So it becomes left to the judiciary to sort this out when Nigerians bring the case to them because we've seen the failings of the security agencies and things like that. But to talk about the APC and to say that this is what they've been doing is not should not shock anyone. It's a fact. You've seen too many cases, and it also speaks to their own party setup, which I've talked about several times about the fact that they were just not a party that was set up to bring. To be a force for good, and it attracted all sorts of characters. They had no internal party discipline. It was always about who had the most power. Buhari had it, so they coalesced around him. And then when things started shifting as he was going, They started making new alliances, and we've seen that happen. Because there was no party discipline is why they don't vet their candidates, and they keep finding out all sorts of things. We saw the finance minister who had to leave office because, of NYSC wahala. We've seen a current minister who is supposed to be serving NYSC, but what has happened? When the president himself has always had issues with his certificates and has no cannot validly tell us what primary school he went to, cannot validly tell us what secondary school he went to, has nobody to call on as mates, has no way to confirm his history. There are conflicting records around his date of birth or where he was born or what his name is. So, I mean, and that came out of this party. So, I mean, Chiloga is stating the obvious.
Thank you, Phoenix. I just want to, obviously, I don't want to comment on the case before the courts. It's up to, we'll wait to see based on the deposition. I think it's tomorrow, whether or not Bola Tinubu's certificate or the one he submitted was genuine. I don't make any comment as to whether or not, as to the genuineness of the document. But in general terms, the one thing I always remember is when I was at university in England at the time, there was an aspiring governor of one of the states in Nigeria. He eventually became a governor. By the time he actually came back to England to get a law degree. And I remember my friends talking about it, how there was this man who was almost 50 in their class, and he was studying for a law degree because he wanted to get proper qualifications so he could eventually run. And he, funny enough, he did run for governor. And he won in one of the Southwest states. And I'm just reflecting on the fact that there was a time when our Nigerian politicians, even as bad as they were, they would take steps to go and get the right documents, do a course, get a degree just so that they could qualify. But it seems that era has passed. And now people are not even bothering. They're just forging documents or just lying low and pretending as if the country doesn't know that they don't have the qualifications. So I suppose my final question on this point is, what has changed? What is this new kind of politics where people cannot even be bothered to go back and get a high school diploma? They'd rather just forge one. What is causing all this, Phoenix?
It's the impunity we've talked about, Michael. I mean, impunity begets impunity, and then it changes culture. Because what happens is once people do things a certain way and get away with it, others look at it and then they try. They see that nobody is calling them out, and it becomes the new way of doing things. That's what we've seen. We've seen that, we've seen a total debasement of the Nigerian culture, and guess what? It's only going to get worse, because what first started happening was we saw the rascality happening in executive spaces. I've talked about Kemi Adeosun. I've talked about Magu. There was this guy that was a fugitive for stealing pension money that Buhari came brought back and gave work. There was Malami and all the nonsense he was doing. All those things kept changing the way people saw how things should be done. And I'm always careful to also not act as if what had happened before Buhari was all perfect. We know that there were governance failures then as well. We remember all the noise about, Dasuki and things like that. Even as at the end of the day, they swept it under the carpet and nothing came of it. But more recently, we've seen more acts of impunity layer one on top of the other, such that it now became a case of, you know what, as long as you can have the bravado, you can get away with it. Then we started seeing the courts get involved and putting a stamp on it. Because when a court can tell us that even if you prove that the NYSC certificate that was presented by a candidate is forged, the candidate does not require NYSC to qualify for election, so the person stays in office. That's crazy. I mean, when you get to that level, you've finished the country entirely. Because once the courts start stamping, that kind of impunity, I mean, people are just going to say, "Oh, okay, cool. That's where we are now. That's where we are now." And so you will find it not only being in the public spaces, it will permeate into private spaces, and before you know it, that changes how the country, and we already have challenges with the country and with the value system, which also has been affected by politicians, and they're dipping their hands into the treasury. You see politicians who had only one shirt, they win elections, and before you know it, they have mansions in Dubai. So young people in general are now enamored of that, get rich quick, do things a certain way, and that changes the country. So yeah, we've seen that, turn things around, and it will only get worse, especially if this guy that is president, if it is proven. Again, I keep saying there's a caveat, right? We don't know what will be revealed. It could turn out that everything is fine and he was just playing games and, messing around with them, which I mentioned last week, that there are two ways this thing can land. It could be that there was really nothing. He just wanted to waste Atiku's time, and then they will come out and release the documents, and poof, it goes up, not nothing. But if it's the other way that most people expect, that there is something untoward and that would get revealed, and the Supreme Court doesn't take action, and he manages to retain his position, all bets are off. You just told the nation that lawlessness pays, and that this is how to do things. So, Supreme Court justices need to think very, very hard. If presented with compelling evidence that this man is not fit to be president, they need to do the jobs that they've been given, and set things right for the country.
Thank you, Phoenix. Now on to our final topic, which is the alleged poisoning of Nigeria's Minister for Tourism, Lola Adejohn. She's reported to be in critical condition at a hospital in Abuja. So, firstly, Phoenix, are we back to the, I think it was around 1999-ish, that the Attorney General was assassinated, Bola Ige was assassinated under President Obasanjo. Is this a return to that period, Phoenix?
I really don't know what it is, because I mean I read the news with shock when I first heard that she had been poisoned, allegedly poisoned, let me say that, and then of course that she was in critical conditions and all of that, and I was like, I mean, she's only just taking office when. What could be, and what is so interesting about the portfolio or whatever, So I was like, surely there cannot be some conspiracy around this. Maybe she just ate something that doesn't agree with her. Or, I mean, when people hear poison, they think that somebody there was some malafide involved, like somebody actually put something in the food or in something that she ingested. Poisoned can also mean that you eat something, maybe seafood that has gone bad, or you eat something that you don't know that you have an allergy to, or something like that. So I wanted to believe, knowing fully well that, I mean, she's only just taking the position in the tourism industry. I wanted to believe that maybe something, it was just an unfortunate accident and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it's become interesting to first of all hear that the ministry then said, no, she wasn't a victim of poisoning, that she had malaria and that she's okay. Then we heard news of, family and ministry. We're at loggerheads over what healthcare center she should go to. And then we hear the police was investigating. So now it's how my theory is being challenged. You say, okay, with all this drama happening, maybe there's more to the story than meets the eye. And truly one should be worried if public officials are now coming under such attacks. So, we wait to see what the police investigation throws up. I mean, and it will also be good for us to hear from the family and also know what the true state of affairs is. But yeah, I would really be concerned if we get into that period, into that scenario where it's attempted assassination of a public official. That would be very, very unfortunate.
Thank you, Phoenix. I suppose this is where we delve into the realms of Nigerian politics proper, because I'm sure you know this, but a number of times I've been at events where there are prominent politicians there. And one thing I've noticed is, one, they don't eat anything served them. In fact, some of them actually have their own chefs who cook food for them on the way to events. So only what their chef cooks is what they eat. And the same thing with drinks. They don't drink anything. At most, they'll drink a bottle of water, but you have to bring the bottle to them and open it in front of them because of fear of this kind of poisoning. Is this something that is this common world over, or is this a unique Nigerian politician behavior, Felix?
I think it depends on the political context. I mean, I've watched political shows created in the abroad, where you also see that kind of being concerned about what you ingest, and you know, you don't just. I think it comes with the territory, right? Especially if you know that there's acrimony, or if you know that the way you got to power was not straightforward, or that you have enemies or things like that. So not, I mean, I've seen, not just in Nigeria, people be very careful about what they ingest, especially if they're in public spaces and things like that. So I would go so far to say, no, I don't think that this is a Nigeria-specific thing. I think in places where power is sought after, and you know, people would do anything to have it, people tend to be very careful about what's around them.
And then the follow-up question is, from my understanding of Nigerian politics, there tends to be acrimony about what Nigerians call juicy appointments. So if, for example, this was the Minister for Petroleum or the Minister for Transport, then people would expect that there will be this kind of infighting, because apparently the budgets in those ministries are huge and there's a lot of patronage to dispense. But would you have thought that the Ministry of Tourism is the sort of portfolio that would lead to poisoning and acrimony? Is there that much money in the Ministry of Tourism to dispense, Phoenix?
Michael, that was my thinking as well. I mean, you remember I was saying that when I thought about it, I was Minister for Tourism, and I was like, I mean, who is going after the Minister for Tourism? So I mean, there are people, it doesn't matter whether it is Minister for just opening doors. People just believe that, yes, there's access to public money, you have a budget, and so there's some cream there that some people might want for themselves. So, especially in the Nigerian context, especially with how depraved politics has been in the country of late, I don't think there's any small ministry in anybody's eyes anymore now. And it also speaks to, you know, one wonders, you know, what sort of, you know, conversations or process that brought her to that position. Because again, I was spending time looking into her background. What had she done in the past? I mean, she's largely an IT professional who's worked in banking and then has been based in the UK running her own company ostensibly. So I'm like, well, yeah, what's the link to tourism? And maybe there's some background context to all this drama. But again, I want to make clear that I'm still holding out on this being something unfortunate around food poisoning that has nothing to do with any conspiracy or anything until we hear definitively from either maybe the family or the police as a result of their investigation. So for me, that's where I'm at. But while we are in the realm of, looking into this because it's Nigeria and we see all the cutthroat politics happening, yeah, it does sound strange. It does sound strange.
No, thank you. I suppose the other point somebody made, a commentator on social media made the point. I don't know if you agree or disagree, but he said the culture of do or die that the APC seems to have encouraged in the way they conducted the elections, in the way courts are giving rulings that make no sense, in the way thugs are openly threatening voters with no consequences. This commentator said it is that culture of do or die that is also now emboldening politicians, encouraging them to take whatever steps to eliminate their enemies because, as the president allegedly said, power doesn't come to you a la carte. You have to grab it, as he said. So this commentator says, well, this is evidence of people following the president's instructions. Well, what are your views on that, Phoenix?
I can see reason in what the person said. Again, I mean, it goes back to the conversation we're having earlier about how if you've created a certain culture, you should not be surprised to see it play out, right? So we've seen this continued race to the bottom. We've seen this continued, by any means necessary. We saw the thuggery, we saw the desperation. I've seen people well educated, well, I mean, who've progressed in life in good spaces, who would defend APC as if their life depended on it, even as in their sane moments, I would expect that they know that this is not proper. But there seems to be some kind of hold that this whole thing has on them. And that obviously feeds into how people then, I think, we've gotten to a place where economically, I think a lot of people believe that the only game in town is government and access to government perks, goodies, all those kind of things. And so there's a desperation, there's a desperate, chase, pursuit of, being in government, having access, because they're unable to create wealth, create opportunities outside of that. And that desperation, leads to this kind of behavior and culture that we're seeing.
Thank you, Phoenix. Well,
And that's why,
let's.
and just a final point on that, that's why it's extremely important and why I've always made, no bones about the fact that my focus is on the economy. Because I believe very strongly that if we can make it work and work for everybody, you begin to and slim down and make a government smaller. And that's one of the reasons why I haven't, I mean, Tinubu has started off on the wrong foot as far as I'm concerned with his 48 ministers and all that nonsense. So for me, you need to really get to a point where it's private sector driven economy. We're creating jobs for people. We're changing the paradigm and the way we look at growth and accumulation. Without doing that, you continue to see this degeneration, and it's only going to get worse. It is because the next generation are seeing this as the only way. You're not creating a different vision for them, you know, and it's crazy.
Well, thank you, Phoenix, but our time is up. We obviously wish the minister a speedy recovery, and we pray that the police force rise to the occasion and find the culprits, especially the police officers who seem to spend all their time on Twitter engaging in petty arguments. We hope they get off Twitter and go and investigate this serious poisoning and get to the root of the matter. But until the same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to all our listeners.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks, listeners. Wishing you a great week ahead. Bye, everyone.